gonna yell at me if I touch these?
Good morning, everyone. And as you know, today is the 21st of February, and this is the Committee on Economic Development and Trade. With that gavel, I will bring the committee to order because we have scheduled an information meeting today, and we want to talk about housing as it relates to economic development. So I'm going to invite Director Salazar to come up with Ms. Travis. Good morning to both of you. I hope you didn't have a long drive this morning.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. We are your Portland contingent of OHCS. We braved sleet, snow, rain, all sorts of other factors to get here. Nothing could keep us away from this committee. Thank you very much for having us today.
You're very welcome.
We appreciate the opportunity to address you this morning. What we wanted to do is give you a little bit of information about the Oregon Housing and Community Services statewide housing plan, the outreach that we've been
Director, I'm not sure whether you formally introduced yourself.
Forgive me. For the record, my name is Margaret Salazar, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. I got too excited talking about the weather. Lost track of myself.
I understand.
So we wanted to give an overview of our statewide housing plan, which is the effort that our agency is undertaking to do a broad look at Oregon's housing needs and really map out a five-year strategic plan and strategy for the agency to address them. We've been all across the state having listening sessions in various communities, and we have some information that we think the committee will find interesting. Later in our presentation, we'll invite up Jason Lewis-Berry, the governor's regional solutions director, to talk about the effort that we're working on with his team around workforce housing development. So I'll talk a little bit about our statewide housing plan outreach. As I mentioned, this will be a five-year plan for the agency. Last fall, we embarked on an ambitious agenda to traverse the state and hold information sessions with practitioners, local government folks, folks involved in affordable housing development and services, as well as other community-based services and planning efforts. We visited 19 communities, 22 forums with advocates, as well as tribes. We engaged 575 Oregonians, all told. And in addition to convening the practitioners and the professionals that we work with, we also wanted to hear directly from Oregonians who are impacted by the dearth of affordable housing options. And so we held focus groups with low-income Oregonians in various communities across the state. We also directly engaged Oregon farm workers to hear their specific concerns about their housing needs. And certainly, we heard a lot about the importance of housing as an economic development instrument and the link between affordable housing, housing opportunities, and the economic health of the communities that we visited. We heard a lot about how housing, health, and jobs are very intertwined and interconnected, and certainly that while our charge as your state housing agency is to develop new housing opportunities, that on the other side of the coin, we certainly can't build our way out of this issue. We also need on the other side for families to have wages that will allow them to afford various housing opportunities. So there is that link to jobs and economic development. We heard from communities about the lack of transportation and that that was really exacerbating the housing issues, long commutes, lack of availability to access jobs, schools, and other services, particularly, of course, in rural areas where folks are trying to stitch together various services and support systems, and without access to transportation, public transportation, they are limited in being able to access those basic needs. There also is, of course, an added cost burden, and often when we talk about housing needs, we talk about the housing and transportation costs really as intertwined. As I'm sure all of you are aware, as you get out of sort of urban cores and main streets and into outlying areas, housing costs tend to be less expensive. But when you add in the transportation costs, it really is a cost burden that we need to take under advisement because it often ends up being just as expensive, if not more so, than that inner urban core or small main street location. And certainly we want to talk about housing and its link to economic development and economic revitalization of cities and towns. So we heard a lot about the intersection between economic development, the development of jobs, and housing. Folks talked about the lack of family wage jobs to enable them to pay market rents in their communities. We also heard about folks that don't have full-time work, and so that part-time work is not enough to pay the rents or the mortgages in their communities. And then certainly for those of us involved in affordable housing or just even market-rate housing development, we heard a lot in rural communities, in particular in small towns, about the lack of contractors and subcontractors available to help build housing opportunities, and that was really seen as stressing the situation and adding a concern about the lack of development capacity in local communities to not be able to have folks on the ground to be able to build the housing that we need. And then in addition to building the housing we need, I also want to mention that that lack of contractors also contributes to the housing quality issues in many of our communities across the state, where we know that we have deteriorating housing stock, we have aging housing stock, we have obsolete housing stock, and the lack of professionals available to do those repairs is really creating a problem for folks with their housing as well as that economic vitality in local communities. I also wanted to just mention that those of us in the housing world are keenly aware that when we do build housing, whether it's market rate housing or affordable housing, that creates jobs. It not only creates construction jobs, but it also creates long-term jobs in the management and oversight of these properties and contributes to that real estate sector. And these are some data that we've used in our conversations with the treasurer's office that really every $1 million in housing, $1 million in housing construction activity project costs generates about 7 direct and indirect jobs. So there is that contribution that housing makes as well to actually job creation and economic stimulation for local communities. Now I'd like to turn things over to my colleague, Kim Travis, who really led a number of these regional conversations and can talk to you about what she saw on the ground in communities as part of our outreach.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Gomber and committee members. Kim Travis, housing integrator with Oregon Housing and Community Services. So I'll just highlight a couple of things that we heard in two communities, a couple of profiles. So Lincoln City, which Representative Gomberg attended the community meeting that we had there. And as most of you are aware, the coast has its own particular set of issues related to housing, housing access, housing quality. And so what we heard from the participants in Lincoln City are about the jobs that are, you know, close to the ocean and the downtown core, in particular of Lincoln City, but people are traveling great distances for those jobs. What we've been talking about, we realize that housing and transportation are connected, but we often don't use those metrics when we talk about housing cost burdens. So folks were talking about that you know, people are commuting long distances, and those costs really contribute to the housing burdens. The seasonal nature of the economy with coastal communities affects the ability for housing, and we know that the tourism economy also has issues with second homes being a high percentage of the inventory in coastal communities is second homes, and a lot of changing from rental stock to Airbnb or vacation rentals. It's also seen all along the coast as a contributing factor to limited housing access. It was interesting to hear about a cycle of eviction being connected to the tourism season as well. So we heard a lot of interesting anecdotes in these communities, and that was something I think that we hadn't really thought about, that people can have housing during the winter, and then when the tourism season gears up in the late spring and early summer, they're seeing some evictions associated with that timeline. So very interesting situations at the coast. Let's move on to Lakeview.
And Ms. Travis, I'm just going to interrupt you for
just
a minute because that particular listening session I thought was fascinating. One of the details that I think is relevant for the committee's purposes is that in Lincoln City, one-third of the housing are occupied by workforce or year-round residents, one-third are second homes, and one-third of them are in the nightly rental pool. So in other words, one-third of the inventory is available for people to live in year-round, and the current vacancy rate is less than one-half of 1%. Those are dynamics that affect people throughout the workforce, and we're having as much trouble finding people to work at Taco Bell and McDonald's as we are being able to keep teachers or doctors who would look to come to the community and can't find a place to live there.
Yeah. Thank you.
Please, Vice Chair.
Thank you. And if I can add to that, and that's, you know, coast-wide, down mm-hmm. in Southern Oregon, we have a situation where 33% roughly in Curry County of the housing stock is owned by people that don't live there. Vacation rentals are, prevalent all throughout the area. And, you know, when we have smaller school districts down in Southwest Oregon, so you usually get the teachers coming in the beginning of their career or, of course, ending, but the majority of in the beginning of their career, and they can't afford to find any place to live.
Yeah.
And it's a huge issue.
Yeah. Thank you for elaborating on that. Yes.
So are the land prices high or not available to build?
Well,
please.
Thank you for the question. It's a combination, Representative. Yes, prices on the coast are a little more expensive than I would say in other areas of the state. That said, the land use laws don't really allow, because there's a lot of, you know, in Curry County, 1,648 square miles, 67% is federally owned, 22% is private timber, 7% is farm, and 1% is state, which leaves less than 4.5% of economically developable, buildable land. And so when you have the 19 goals and the land use laws across the state that really don't fudge, that's why you see me in Ag and Natural Resources always pushing back, I think, on those issues as well.
And I didn't want to do a case study on Lincoln City this morning, but three of us are coasties here on the committee. The other thing I would observe is that if you have a buildable lot and you have a choice between building a vacation home, a nightly rental home, or workforce housing, which are you going to build? The answer is you're going to build the one that makes you the most money. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the dynamic that goes into all of this as well. So,
and we can talk about this later, but I have a bill for that, which is 4108, that provides the tax incentive to look at the folks to build that workforce housing rather than what you just described, just making the, so rather than them making their money on the front end, they receive it in a tax credit on the back end, and it goes to the 120% or below average median income or area income, which is the workforce that we have.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I think to take it from another waterway from the ocean to the Columbia River, Hood River is experiencing the same thing, where housing prices, stock is down, land use, and it goes back to what are you going to make most of your money on if you split your lot out or you want to put an auxiliary dwelling unit? And Hood River tried to address those concerns through local ordinances, but still, you can't find workforce housing because there's jobs that are there, but there people are living in Gresham or living right away from the region, driving 20 to 30 minutes just to get to a place to work.
Absolutely. Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you. So let's shift from the coast to
you.
Lakeview.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the great discussion. I think, you know, that really highlights the rich conversations that we were able to participate with folks around the state. And so moving on to Lakeview, we had the the community meeting in Klamath, but we had folks come over from Lakeview, economic development professionals, and I just highlighted a few things from Lakeview and related to what Director Salazar was talking about with workforce issues around contractors. So they said anecdotally, you know, two contractors in Lakeview and they're booked out for a whole year. I mean, you can't even get a new roof or even, you know, gutters for a whole year. So they really talked about that because they have issues with aging housing inventory. And the Housing Authority used the statistics of 90% of the houses in Lakeview don't pass the housing quality standards that are HUD standards that are required in order to use vouchers. So just really highlighting the deteriorating housing stock and the need for rehab in some of these new some of these communities, as well as new construction. So,
Representative.
Thank you, Chair. So a question about that. I would assume, I mean, there's a contractor issue, but I would guess that there's also a money issue in terms of upgrading these homes in Lakeview.
Representative and Chair, it's a great comment. We absolutely have, one of the things that we observed is not only do we need more resources to invest in the housing quality and the need to build housing, we do have capacity issues. So we certainly are tracking some of the proposals to that would create more resources for our agency very closely. I would say that one of the things we learned was even with additional resources, we do not necessarily have the folks in place in local communities to utilize them, whether it's the lack of contractors in place, whether it's the lack of developers, whether it's the lack of city staff to be able to put development in motion and work with those partners. So I think we're also very interested as part of our planning efforts to take a look at that whole capacity issue and understand how we can make sure that we can best deploy the resources that we do have to bring to bear for these issues.
But it does seem like a critical issue in terms of when we talk about housing, there's the number of housing units and there's the targeted investments made in housing that's on the ground, like that 90% of houses, to make sure that they don't just deteriorate and fall apart.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you have all public employers down there. There used to be a mill down there. Is there still a mill down there, or is it just ranching as the main industry? Lakeview?
I believe there is a mill. But we didn't speak about that at the community meeting. The economic development folks highlighted these employers as ones that they've been talking to and that have been having trouble recruiting and retaining employees. Yeah.
Thank you.
We wanted to talk also today about the agricultural workforce housing issues. We did hold focus groups specifically around farm workers and farm worker needs. This is a population that we've been wanting to learn more about. We've wanted to engage agricultural workers specifically in outreach and conversations. And so as part of our report, we did engage focus groups of farm workers, and we learned that farm workers are facing tremendous housing pressures due to the lack of available affordable housing options. Farm workers have moved away from areas with agricultural work for lack of housing options. So, for example, the representative from Hood River and the comments that you made around the lack of housing availability in some of these historic agricultural areas, we are seeing folks actually commute from outside of the areas where they're working. But more often what we're seeing is folks that are really living in overcrowded conditions. And certainly with the housing quality issues of farm worker housing, whether it's dedicated farm worker housing or not dedicated as farm worker housing, but tends to be populated by farm workers, we're seeing really deplorable conditions and concerns. We also heard folks really share some of the barriers that they face in accessing housing and some of the discrimination and those hurdles that they're facing as well.
And Director, I don't want to minimize those observations, but at the same time, are we seeing a decline in the number of available and needed workers in these economies?
I would say certainly one of the things that we've heard from our agricultural workforce housing facilitation team, which engages not only farm worker advocates and representatives from the agricultural workforce, but also agriculture business representatives, we're hearing concerns around the availability of the workforce for agricultural industries. It's the housing issue, but it's of course also the political climate and some of the concerns around immigration policy that are creating some of those concerns.
And I understand my question's going a little bit beyond the purview of your department, but in those conversations, are we hearing that the consequences are a decrease in production, an increase in wages, or a turn toward mechanization? What are the consequences of a shortage of workers in the farm communities that you talk to?
Chair, thank you for the question. I think that does go a little bit beyond the purview of our agency. I will say that we've been pleased to have the to be convening that agriculture workforce housing facilitation team for some time. We have really gone to that team and pressed them to get more engaged in some of these issues. And on the advice of that team, we are actually launching a farm worker housing study that will go more beyond these initial focus groups, and we'll build on this effort to do a more comprehensive look at the farm worker housing needs and really what we're seeing in on the business side of the ledger as well.
All right. Well, so. Thank you for the answer. I'll ask the same question to Mr. Lewis Berry when he comes up, so I'm warning him now.
Thank you so much. And I think we will now turn things over and invite up our colleague from the governor's office.
Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, I'm Jason Lewis Berry. I'm the Director of Regional Solutions and the Governor's Advisor for Economy and Jobs. Thanks for having this hearing. I'm really happy to be here to talk about the Workforce Housing Initiative, which has been a great partnership with the agencies of Regional Solutions, but in particular, I'd like to give some kudos to OHCS, who's been tremendous partners in this. So you've already had some of a rich discussion, so I know this isn't news to you, but just to kind of describe the thinking and the origin story, if you will, behind this initiative. It kind of stemmed from the governor traveling around the state. Now, she spent quite a lot of time on the road last year. And in all these different communities around the state, communities you might think are very different, ranging from the coast to eastern Oregon to in the valley, north, south, et cetera. She was hearing some similar things from business owners in terms of the answer to the question, you know, what's going well, what's not, what's holding you back? And in a lot of places, the general economic trends are positive. We know there's some notable exceptions. But even though those trends are generally positive, she would be hearing from business owners, hey, I've got open jobs here I can't fill. And sometimes that's a workforce development issue. So we know that, acknowledge that. We'll kind of put that in one square over here. But a lot of times, it was a story of, I can't get people a place to live here. So these are good family wage jobs. You know, manufacturing jobs, teaching jobs I heard referenced, medical jobs, doctors, nurses, et cetera. And you have openings, you have employers who are recruiting people. They may even get somebody kind of interested. They start doing an interview. They're on the path to a conditional offer. And then that individual starts to look around town to see if they can find a place to live, and there's not a suitable place for their family. And that's where we kind of got on this path about workforce housing, and the governor tasked Regional Solutions to start tackling that problem. So first, to kind of give a caveat, we're calling it workforce housing. One thing that I've made sure to learn from my colleagues who are actual experts in the housing field is that that's not exactly a technical term. We're talking about middle market housing, roughly 60 to 120% of the area median income. But by saying workforce housing, we're not implying that people who are in affordable housing aren't also part of the workforce, for example. So just put that caveat out there. But it is an issue where we're distinguishing it from another, you know, legitimate challenge that the state faces in some areas, which is affordable housing. But here we're talking about availability more than affordability. There just isn't the stock, isn't the inventory. So we started some initial conversations both internally and with external partners, which kind of led us to believe there might be some potential for a public-private partnership type of model where we do some pilot projects. And it's based on understanding the basics is that in a lot of the state, especially rural areas, it's not penciling out to develop this kind of workforce housing, the middle market type of housing. So we had some internal meetings first with the Regional Solutions agencies, which many of you are familiar, but just to rattle them off, besides OHCS, you have Business Oregon, Department of Transportation, DLCD, and DEQ. And that's a group that I convene periodically at the director level. So those agencies, we sat down and said, okay, put your tools on the table that you think might possibly be relevant to addressing the workforce housing challenge. So certainly housing is well aligned. They have a few different tools that they could consider about program funds that they already have in play. For the other agencies, it could be a little bit more of a creative drill, but it was quite useful. So if you're ODOT, you say, well, we certainly build roads and other types of infrastructure. So if there were some kind of workforce housing development. They required some type of transportation infrastructure to help the overall package pencil out. We might be able to be part of that. And Business Oregon says, well, we care about the state's economic development. So if something that's holding back the creation of good jobs is this housing issue, there may be cases where we could put some of our infrastructure financing in support of initiatives where the private sector is involved in helping to support workforce housing development. Then we had a really good conversation with about 10 or so housing developers, again, from different parts of the states, developers who kind of had different markets that they might have worked in. And we said, okay, here are some of the tools that we've thought about. And I didn't mention, I should have mentioned also kind of the non-financial side of a tool. So for example, DLCD has technical assistance for land use planning, UGB expansions, et cetera. So we then invited this group of developers to come in and said, here are some of the things that the state might be able to do if others are putting skin in the game. You know, help us figure out what would truly be useful. Would these make a difference in penciling things out in some of these areas? And that was useful. I think we kind of eliminated some of the more extraneous things that were kind of round peg square holes and focused in on, you know, core things like the financing, and that's one where some of the OHCS tools are useful, but then also saw that there's technical assistance is could be a significant need in some communities. Then we had a roundtable with employers. So having had these conversations around the state, whether it was the governor traveling or myself traveling or the kind of regular day-to-day work of a regional solutions team, we've heard from employers, whether it's a hospital, a sawmill, a manufacturing center, whatever it might be, we've heard them talk about this concern, and so we said, okay, you're already talking about this, and some of you are already doing something about it. In fact, I note, for example, in Tillamook, the Tillamook Creamery has been working on this problem for some time and putting finances on the table to help fund studies, et cetera, to understand their housing challenge. So we asked them, what is the nature of your problem? How is the housing shortage affecting your business? And what have you already started to do, or what are you thinking about doing? So based on those conversations, we pulled together a request for information that we sent out last September. Is that right? And that was to kind of put the word out to communities that were thinking about doing some kind of pilot project and were interested in hearing from both the public sector at the local and county level, as well as especially the private sector and developers who may be interested about their ideas and how they would leverage state resources in a partnership. We had 37 responses, a really great geographic distribution across the state, a significant portion of those that were responses from private sector actors, another significant portion of those were from cities, some nonprofits. There's a couple, I think we may have some of this on slides that I'm totally ignoring, but the information's probably up there. So that was quite useful in helping us further refine the concept. And then in December, I think it was December 11th, we put out the actual call for applications, the request for applications. And that application period closed January 25th. And so just in these last week or two, we've had our core team of folks like Kim Travis and the Regional Solutions Coordinators looking at those applications and starting to kind of sort them out. And very soon, the Regional Solutions Cabinet, Margaret, myself, and the other agency directors will be looking at those and trying to select the pilots that we're going to move ahead with. Our hope is that we will achieve two goals with these pilots. One is get more units built in places that really need it, but also importantly, learn something. The whole point of a pilot. So we're looking for things that have the potential for replicability, for learning something significant that can inform future housing initiatives in the state. Thank
you. Very good. Well, thank you, sir. And I'll start by repeating my last question. In my district, you drive up and down the highway, you see help wanted signs everywhere. I've actually closed retail outlets because I couldn't find enough employees. And the primary thing I hear from employers is that people that want to work at the coast can't afford to find a place to live at the coast. So in that kind of environment, what are the consequences? Does it mean that it drives up wages? Does it drive down productivity and in fact sometimes cost businesses their business?
Right.
Or do we turn more toward mechanization? What's the big picture here?
Thanks, Chair Gromberg. Great question, and I don't know the exact answer, but I think there's the risk of wage increase. I think automation is already a trend that we're seeing in all sorts of industries, so I expect that would continue, and that might be the kind of thing that you see in that environment. one of the things that it underlines to me, and I think my colleagues on the panel talked about this in the context of their conversations around the state, when you have long commutes, this is the kind of thing that undermines what it means to be a community. If you have people driving an hour, 2 hours, it's not great for families, it's not great for the employers, it's not great for the workers. In some parts of our state, we have significant numbers of people who live in a neighboring state but work in Oregon, and that's not great for tax-based reasons, et cetera. So I think it's a real challenge, and getting the housing built is one of the key pieces to addressing it.
In my own district, again, in the city of Newport, one-third of the workers commute into town on a daily basis, some from as far away as Corvallis. Colleagues, I got some other questions, but I want to give you an opportunity if anybody. Yes, Representative.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We had some conversations about some possible incentives for cities to do affordable housing at no cost to the city, but maybe some reimbursement from the state. But I have a question on the that has to do with the 19 communities that you surveyed. Did you find certain areas of the state where affordable housing or available housing wasn't necessarily a major issue? And were there some areas like the coast, for example, where it's more of an issue?
Is that a question for us? Sure. Thank you very much, Representative and Chair. I think a couple of things. So one is because we engaged folks that work on housing issues, we probably had a little bit of a preconceived notion in the audience that housing was a concern. So to supplement some of those conversations, which I would just say in all of the areas we visited, we had large turnouts and a lot of passion in the room from folks kind of far and wide. I would say to supplement some of that, we're also doing quantitative research, which will kind of supplement those conversations. So we will have data and graphs and kind of analysis that will really help us understand where the needs are more pronounced in different parts of the state and for different populations. So we're doing that data analysis now, and we'd be happy to come back and share that with the committee when it's ready, which I think will really help us benchmark. Yes, we know that we have a crisis around the state, but what does it actually really look like in different communities? I think what was interesting from the outreach was to supplement that number crunching, hearing those stories, and then really hearing the themes that came out of those stories. For example, the discussion about the lengthy commutes, we couldn't have anticipated or really seen that from the data. The conversation we heard about local capacity and what that feels like in a community where they feel stuck, that wouldn't have come out through the number crunching. And then certainly the personal stories around housing quality and what that experiences like for farm workers and families in all different kinds of economic sectors was very powerful. But we would be happy to share the numbers with you as well when they're available.
Thank you. Follow-up comment?
Please.
I really like the idea of the public-private partnership. And my hope is that we'll hear back some information on how those pilots are going, maybe in January or something, if that's not too soon. So, thank you.
Very good. I'm going to call on Representative Marsh and then Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Chair. I'm wondering if you could give us any hints as to what some of the innovative projects are. I mean, clearly you're in the choosing mode, but any really great ideas out there that are percolating?
Chair Gromberg, Representative Marsh, thanks for the question. I'm going to defer to my colleague here, Kim Travis, who has done great work leading the initial review team, which I do both because she's more of an expert and because I haven't actually fully digested all the applications yet, because I haven't quite come to the directors.
Thank you. I think, really what we are excited about and what we are pleased to see in the applications is the linkage with employers. And that is something that we haven't really pursued in this state. Other states have employer-assisted housing types of programs, and there are a couple of examples in Oregon where that's happening. So I think that we're pleased with the applications that are leading with employer participation and in some cases contribution to a project, whether that's something like a master lease agreement with a developer to construct new housing and to provide some certainty around private market lenders, you know, to have that pre-lease arrangement is something that is innovative. So, you know, I think as we're looking at moving some of these pilot projects forward, that employer piece is really exciting and really innovative for our state, and we're hoping to build on that going forward.
Thank you.
Representative Barreto.
Mr. Chair, so are most other states being hit with the same issue with workforce housing, or are there some states that have escaped it?
Representative and Chair Gomberg, thank you very much for the question. We have talked about this issue with our colleagues both in on the West Coast in Washington, California, as well as at a national level. I will say everyone, all the states that we've talked to are concerned about what they're calling the missing middle. Yeah. So the fact that we really don't have any targeted approach to that sort of middle-income housing. However, there are some examples that we're looking at in other states. So Minnesota, for example, has a very robust employer-assisted housing program that they have offered to share with us. We've been speaking with them to learn about their lessons. We also are talking with folks who have done work in Massachusetts around a workforce housing program. I don't know that we have examples of folks that have addressed this issue in more rural states. And I think it probably looks very different than some of the strategies in larger cities. And I think that's where we're really trying to push that next level of conversation to find some examples in more like states that we can learn from.
Sure. Can I follow up? So the other thing I was going to ask is we hear a lot about family wage jobs. And so do you have those numbers as far as what is a family wage job, and is it different in Portland than it is in La Grande, et cetera, or Lakeview? Mm-hmm.
Chair Gomberg, Representative Barreto, thanks for the question. I can get those numbers. I don't have them offhand, but clearly it is different from a metro area to a more rural area. And
if you get them, I'd like them.
You bet. And anecdotally, when we heard from companies that had, you know, in some of our eastern Oregon towns, for example, when they had a good job in a manufacturing facility, for example, that would pay $60,000-$70,000, you know, we know that's a good family wage job in that area.
All right, if you can get that information, share it with professional staff, she can distribute it to the committee. Representative Helfrich.
Chair, thank you. Director Lewis-Berry, just real quick, you were at LCDC in Hood River, and Regional Solutions was at the table with McKed. Could you just let the rest of the commission know how reaching this subject is and how that was brought to the attention that first day at the conference there in Hood River, because the state has done a really good job of trying to capture this and the land use issues that are also being addressed because of the workforce housing.
Chair Gomberg, Representative Helfrich, thanks for the question. So I was in Cascade Locks for a conversation, but it actually would have been, I think, my colleague Nate Stice, who was at the LCDC meeting. So I wasn't there for that particular conversation.
I know. Well, for the committee, for chair, the committee or Regional Solutions came to the table with LCDC Land Use Development Committee or Commission, and they really had a broad-based discussion that day about how land use is affecting workforce housing and the ability of stock, especially within the Columbia Gorge National Scenic Area. And it was a very robust conversation. So there's a lot of people at the table that wanted to come up with solutions to the issues that we're addressing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thank you, Representative Clem.
Yeah, I think largely the housing bubble caused a lot of builders to get nervous, and banks probably to get nervous about lending. So that's why you see it as a national problem. And you certainly have pockets of Oregon, like Hood River in particular, is constrained on both sides. And if you try and go up the valley, those of us who have farmland there will fight you. So they've got a tricky situation with the Residents Committee and others. Because it's an agriculture is a huge industry. We don't want to lose that either, just paving it over. So they're just in a tight spot, which if you already own a house there, great. Your value's gone up tremendously over the last 30 years. But if you don't, it's pretty tricky. And they do creative infill, I mean, all kinds of stuff to try and make it work, but it's still $400,000 is like the average basic starter home almost now. It's like it's Lake Oswego. It's really difficult for them. Affordability there in particular, because you got all the ag people who don't want houses on our land. So some do. Some are ready to sell and get out of it, but it is really tough. But I do, you know, I chair the land use, or a lot of the land use bills go through our ag committee, and I do spend a lot of time thinking about what's the role of the land use system contributing to it generally. if it were purely land use, we wouldn't have the problems everywhere. We definitely have problems in high growth areas like Metro, where there's huge efforts to push the UGB out, and occasionally Metro saying, no, we can accommodate all the growth with what we've got, and then people are like, I don't buy that. So there's definitely a real debate about land use, but until you get builders having cash, which now I think they do again, and you can see it in Beaverton, things are, where we did the land use grand bargain and it freed up a bunch of South Hillsborough and stuff, that all went immediately. So clearly, if you say okay and money's there, it'll happen. But in a rural area like where I grew up in Coos Bay, I don't think the land use system is what's not driving economic growth. It's the lack of opportunity for people to be able to get into the forests, use federal wood, because there isn't a lot there except trees and some nice people like my parents. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. They produce news against them, but they probably are nice despite them. So I struggle a lot with how to help rural Oregon. Well, one option, there's a Senate bill that would say, okay, fine, take them out of the land use system in many categories. See if that brings back Lake County. I doubt it will, but, you know, it's one theory. See what happens. It's tricky.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you. Vice Chair.
Thank you, and I appreciate the comments. I like
except having, for about your parents.
Yeah. I like having a Representative Clem on the Ag and Natural Resources Chair, because he did grow up in Coos Bay, of course, and Representative McEwen fights hard for our South Coast District as well. It is all about jobs. I've often said there's only so many bedpans in Curry in our Southwest Oregon area, and that's the case, because unless we can have those middle-income, family-wage jobs there, and I don't know if it's it is a forest component, it's a natural resource component that's necessary for that built our rural communities and are meant to sustain them. And unless we can find some avenues that allow us to you know, manage that and grow those sectors, if it's the ologists involved with new management because of changing conditions or what have you, we're going to continue to struggle. And you know, a lot of our youth, there's nothing for them to stay for, so they move into, you know, Representative Clem's district or elsewhere. And then again, as you have Representative Gomber's comments, there's no housing for the folks that, for the jobs that are associated with the service industry in his community. So they have to drive in upwards of an hour just to, you know, go to a job. So, you know, we've looked at some legislation last session. I know I was involved with Representative Leininger on 3012 that kind of allowed a secondary ADU on rural residential property, of course not splitting and so forth, and I appreciate that, but the original house had to be 1950 or before, and that was the agreement. I would have liked to have seen it in 1973 when the land use laws went into effect, because that would have been a lot more universal. And so I hope to, you know, readdress that in next session. You know, I think that if we can have these minor tools in the land use system, it's not the, you know, panacea of the fix, right? But it will allow us the ability in rural Oregon, because let's face it, urban Oregon's paved over the best farmland in the state. Now they want to save everything else. And that's just my opinion. But, you know,
we still have some good stuff in Marion County.
You do. But we need to do something for our succession planning for our farmers and ranchers in rural Oregon. You know, there's lots of families that own hundreds and hundreds of acres that, you know, their grandparents had, that their kids now have seven, you know, siblings, and, you know, they aren't allowed to put a house on it unless it's 140 apiece. And it's just, you know, we need to find these fixes that can assist in growing our rural communities.
Thank you for those observations as well, Representative Brock-Smith. And, of course, as you've alluded to, we've got several different committees that are looking at the housing issue, not the least of which is the Housing Committee, and Agriculture and Natural Resources dealing with some of the land use issues. But you touched on something that I want to ask about, because this, we're looking at housing as how it relates to economic development. And we've talked a lot about workforce housing and people that are in the workforce, but I often make reference as well to the retirement industry and I refer to it as an industry. And many of us are representing rural communities where the population is aging, in some cases because young people are moving away, in other cases because retirees are moving in. But I'm wondering if you have any particular comments about housing and the retired sector or older Oregonians, mm-hmm. and then unique challenges or opportunities they're facing.
Thank you very much, Chair Gomberg, for that question. I will say the first thing that comes to mind is when we talk about housing quality and we talk about folks that are residing, for example, in aging properties, and in particular what comes to mind is manufactured housing and mobile home parks. We have a lot of senior citizens, and when we talk about succession planning, we need to plan for doing comprehensive repairs and upgrades of some of these older properties so that we can help seniors to age in place if they choose to do so. And so often that would include some minor repairs, things like grab bars and accessibility ramps and other things. When we talk about mobile homes, we have a whole different set of conversations around some of these older homes that need to be replaced with new energy efficient and accessible homes. And that's a conversation that we are engaged in as an agency, that we're really looking for some solutions, because kind of band-aids and over band-aids over band-aids over band-aids on some of these older homes is not going to cut it. So the first thing that comes to mind is really that housing quality issue when we talk about aging populations and helping folks to stay in their homes. We also do a lot of work on foreclosure prevention, so really helping folks that are homeowners be able to afford to stay in their homes on a fixed income. And folks are, we're really hit with the recession. Now folks may have things like back taxes and other things, so we have some programs to help folks stay current. I think we haven't engaged, and hopefully through our statewide housing plan, we can engage in that bigger conversation around the demographic shift, the aging population, and how we need to think a little bit differently about our housing development so that we make sure that we're accommodating seniors as well.
Very good. And colleagues, just to be clear, when I refer to the retirement industry, I'm talking
the
in
Senate?
Large part, pardon me?
The Senate?
Sorry. I have this ongoing observation that we have a lot of people who are no longer in the workforce, but they're active, they're vibrant, and in many cases they have an income stream and a lifetime of experience that they're contributing back to communities, particularly in tourism-based communities where these people have moved in after visiting for many years and they're living there year-round. And it's not just a question of health care. They're getting work done on everything from getting their grass cut to getting their hair cut. And I think it is an industry, but it hasn't often been looked at as such. Representative Brock Smith.
Well, and I appreciate this conversation as well. So when I was a county commissioner in Curry County, we started the Rehome Oregon program that addressed the we had the $3 million USDA grant that looked at the manufactured homes, because about 13,000 homes in Curry County, and roughly a third of that is manufactured, and half of that is manufactured pre-1980, which doesn't come to the standards that are necessary. And so it really was pushed by a health assessment that we did in the county, because a lot of these folks are lower-income families that don't really have the health insurance, that use the ER as their primary care physician, so which is driving up costs across the spectrum. And so what Rehome Oregon did was it was able to, there's two components, but replace older manufactured homes with USDA-backed 3% mortgages. In many cases, the home loans were, the energy savings alone, because of the high energy costs with, you know, all of these older manufactured homes, paid for the new mortgage, or almost. Then we partnered with our local electric utility to have, you know, energy efficiencies done with regards to doors, windows, heating systems, that also made a big difference. So we have templates, if you will, and, you know, I am, for one, am, you know, in favor of, I'm trying to see if we can't support those dollars again for, you know, we had it locked in Curry, I think, for 2 years because we were the pilot. And it you know, it was really a hand up rather than a hand out, and it did some really, you know, the first home was in North County in my hometown, so it was a great opportunity. Now we have an opportunity, you know, I'll be remiss if I don't throw out 4108. I mean, we have an opportunity for the state to invest, and it's amended to where it's 5% Anyway, it's a workforce housing bill. I'm having staff bring it down to you so you can see it. But it hits what you're talking about, which is the niche of the middle-income families. It invests a $5 million a year tax credit for folks that will get that build that get 25% back if they sell to these qualified buyers that are 120% or below area median income. And so, you know, we have to invest in this problem as a state. I think it's a good investment to give a hand up, because especially since these folks have the ability that will be qualified buyers are currently renting, and then they'll be leaving that rental and allow opening up that rental for a lower income family as well. So it's a win-win, I think, and so do the many co-sponsors of the legislation.
Representative Marsh.
I was just going to say, I think this rich conversation really validates the work that you're doing to do this statewide assessment. I mean, this is an issue that is, you can parse on many different levels, the demographics, the kind of communities, the economic capacity of those communities to support people and to support different housing modes. So you will have your report finished when?
Representative and Chair, we are looking to have a draft of the plan in the fall. So we should be able to share that.
And I think it would be wonderful for us to have you come back. We don't sit squarely in housing, but clearly housing is implied in everything that we do around economic development.
Thank you.
Excellent. Well, colleagues, I'm looking to see if there's any other questions. Otherwise, I'm going to move us toward a wrap-up so that Representative Klim can head over to the Senate and do some damage control.
Yeah, my wife might be have a few words with me when I get home tonight about that comment.
And I'm going to invite our guests to offer any concluding remarks if they wish. But what I'm continuing to hear when we talk about housing is not that Oregon has a housing problem. Instead, that Oregon has a multitude of housing problems. In some cases, affordability. In some cases, supply. In some cases, deterioration and repair. Anything that you'd like to offer in closing?
Chair Gomberg, first of all, I just wanted to thank you and thank the committee members for inviting us here today and having the opportunity to further kind of tie together the housing issues with the economic and trade issues that you all are wrestling with. Really appreciated the rich dialogue. We hope it's the start of a conversation with this committee. You know, we know how critical housing is to the economic health of communities across the state, and some great ideas, I think, were unearthed today, so we look forward to continuing the conversation. Anything you'd like to?
She said it perfectly.
Indeed.
Andrew,
all right. Well, thank you again for joining us today. Ms. Leone, we're going to be getting back together again. I do not see any legislation coming our way from the Senate.
Sign any diet time.
Mr. Chair, you are correct. We have not had any bills referred to us in the second chamber, which our last committee meeting would be on Monday. We do have another informational meeting scheduled for Monday morning at 8:30, however.
Excellent. All right. Anything for the good of the order? In which case, I'll thank you for being with us today, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.